Thinking of starting a podcast? Well, try Anchor. It's free, easy to use, and its creation tools allow you to record and edit directly from your phone or computer. It'll even take care of distribution for you with a single tap so you can be heard on platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. Also, Anchor is the only place you can publish video podcasts directly to Spotify. Man, you can even make money using Anchor in a couple of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. It's truly everything you need in one place to make a podcast. So make sure to go download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Again, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Welcome to another edition of the It's Cavalier podcast. As always, it's your boy Mac, and today I'm joined by special guest, Mr. Evan Damrell himself of Locked On Cavs, as well as the creator of Write Down Euclid. And if you are not a subscriber to either one of those two, you are missing out on some very good content. With that being said, man, how you doing, Evan?
I'm great, man. You know, it's not snowing. Everyone kept telling me today it was supposed to snow in Cleveland, so fingers crossed. It's freakishly cold out, but hey, life is good. The Cavs are doing okay. It's NFL trade deadline day, so we'll see what happens with the Browns. But other than that, man, like, it's good to see the Cavs not making the news for the wrong reasons. I'm gonna leave the floor to the Browns on that one. How are you, though?
I'm doing good. I mean, 8 straight matchups against playoff caliber opponents, you know, to begin the season. And I must admit, you know, I've been very high on the Cavs, you know, throughout the summer and whatnot, and to begin the season. But I would be lying if I told you I think the Cavs would be sitting here at 4-4, you know, to begin the season, especially with that rough, that brutal West Coast trip. That was a doozy right there. And I'm glad to see them back on the East. But last night's win in particular, you know, it pointed out a couple of things, and it's got me feeling really good.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, man, you're good. I was just going to say, you know, first time meeting up with Charlotte, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. You know, they really heavily featured Miles Bridges, and he destroyed us. It's not as if, you know, Cleveland is equipped to handle, you know, a wing like him, but they did their best in round one. Round two, I think you saw some defensive adjustments, and they were able to make him, you know, a non-factor. Same with LaMelo Ball. You know, LaMelo Ball killed us on the defensive end last time out at 5 really nice steals. But I'm just loving what I'm seeing, man. Who was your player of the game last night?
Oh, gosh, this is a good question. I mean, the obvious pick is Jared Allen, I think. Jared Allen was an absolute monster against Charlotte. You made a lot of good points on how the Cavs adjusted, especially I think J.V. Bickerstaff deserves a little bit of credit, too, and the coaching staff in general, because, like you said, Miles Bridges really killed the Cavs in that first matchup, so it was tough to watch. I joke about this a lot on my show, where he won NBA Player of the Week, and I think because of his performance against the Cavs, that's partially why. Evan Mobley did a good job defending him, though. I think something that's really juicing me about the Cavs right now is the fact that Jared Allen is showing a little bit of switchability on the perimeter, too. And I think if you give that, like, 1-2 years of them getting seasoned Mobley and Allen, like, that's a pretty terrifying defensive tandem. And if Okoro keeps clicking like he has been defensively, like, yes, he may not grow much more offensively. Who knows? He's also super young, so I'm not willing to cast doubt on him yet. But just long story short, Jared Allen is probably my MVP pick, but Lauri Markkanen played really well too. And he used his God-given abilities, which is weird to say because he's 7 feet tall and you think he should be an absolute monster on the glass. But
it's the European mentality, man.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, it's that he played with his size. There's a game moments where he was posting up players. He had 3 blocks, which is impressive, especially considering it's Lauri Markkanen, who's not known as a defensive stalwart. So yeah, man, I think it's a mix between Mobley and Markkanen, or sorry, not Mobley, Allen and Markkanen, but Evan Mobley played well too. Garland looks sharp. I think it was crazy. Ricky Rubio had the best plus minus at plus 23, even though he was a non-factor offensively. I think it speaks volumes on how much of an impact he makes that you can't track tangibly. But Yeah, it was a good team win. I've been looking at the stats a little bit. I think, like you said, it was a tough gauntlet. The first eight teams, like, they're all playoff caliber teams. They played a team in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, they also played a team in the Western Conference Finals, saying Kawhi Leonard. But the Cavs are allowing teams to shoot about middle of the pack in terms of perimeter shooting right now, which is super encouraging considering who they're playing. So I hope a lot of this carries going forward. But right now, yeah, there's a lot of positive vibes surrounding this team after they had their real first test of adversity.
Completely agreed, man. I don't think any Cavs fan would be, you can't give anybody grief if you would think this team last year would probably be sitting around 1-7 or 0-8, considering what they've just faced. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's an unfair statement to say that. What they've been able to do defensively just speaks volumes, especially in the half court. It's awesome. And for Markin in particular, who, you know, a lot of teams are picking on, he is not a natural small forward, especially at 7 foot tall, but he is using his length to his advantage. I would like to think he's always going to remain kind of a step behind some of the true position small forwards and power forwards out there. But as long as he utilizes that length to his advantage, he can kind of offset that. And although the shots aren't falling at a huge clip, I think he led the team in attempts last night. I think he went to, 7 of 19 from the field. And he also led the team in three-point attempts as well, 2 of 8. They are not dropping with a great rate, but just the threat of spacing is enough to draw guys' attention out there. And as you pointed to, you know, him finally working his way inside, that is highly encouraging. There's just, you would like to see some of those rebounding numbers go up a little bit more, you know, with his size, but I can't complain. Mm-hmm. I mean, and for Okoro, as you were stating, I guess my question for you would be, is the role that he's in right now coming off the bench? I think he's getting about 27 minutes, although in 4 appearances. Is this an ideal role for him moving forward if Markkanen continues to play the way he has?
So I'm a big believer in Isaac Okoro. I think defensively he covers up a lot of the warts that the smaller backcourt has. My buddy Justin Roan, you've had him on here before. He's really given me the idea of, like, you look at how a team like Portland, or who's a bad example, or Utah, who's a great example of a smaller backcourt, then you surround them with size and you get players who can play defense to kind of cover up the deficiencies of a smaller backcourt, like a Donovan Mitchell. And I know Mike Conley's good enough defensively, but it's still a smaller player. But you have, like, Ingles, you have Bogdanovich, you have Gobert just covering the back line. You also have Royce O'Neal in Utah situations. So I understand kind of what the Cavs are doing. It's just the problem is, yes, Isaac is very good defensively. I think he still struggles with fouling at times. I think last year was a trial by fire where he had to go one night defending Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, to the following night defending LeBron James, and then soon after that defending James Harden and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving at the same time. Like, that's, I don't envy that at all.
That's a gauntlet.
Yeah. Especially when your primary matchup is like Jetty Osmond in practices and scrimmages, where that's a huge, no disrespect to Jetty, who's been great so far for the Cavs this year. But yeah, I think just because offensively, Isaac still doesn't really look really refined. His biggest concern coming out of Auburn was that even though his shot wasn't totally broken, like the mechanics were there, they needed some tweaking and adjustments. He's just not a reliable threat in terms of three-point shooting. And I guess JB Bickerstaff more or less doesn't really look at this team positionally, if that makes sense. So he doesn't say, like, a point guard, you're a shooting guard, you're a small forward, power forward, center, blah, blah, blah. He firmly believes putting the 5 best players on the floor at any given moment. He calls them smalls and bigs. And I'm still figuring out where Isaac falls. I'm still figuring out where Jetty falls in this. But I know, like, if you have your Kevin Love's, your Jared Allen's, your Larry Markkanen's, your Evan Mobley's, those are your bigs. Your smalls are for sure Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Ricky Rubio. I think maybe Jetty falls in the bigs because he plays power forward times. Maybe Isaac's just situational. A fluid player. Yeah, situational. So it's weird because I don't think this 3 big lineup works. I think it's a fun offensive wrinkle. We had Larry Nance Jr. on our show 2-3 years ago at this point, mm-hmm. and we asked him, because it was soon after they debuted the 3 big lineup with him, Tristan, and Kevin against Miami, and we asked him, like, did you guys know what you're doing? He's like, no, I'll be honest, we didn't know what we were doing, but thankfully Miami didn't know what we were doing either, so it worked. So I'm a firm believer of the idea of It's only weird if it doesn't work, and this is definitely weird, but it is working, so I can shut the voice up in the back of my head when I watch some unconventional basketball. So just to answer your question, until Isaac's shot's a little bit more refined, you have to find a justifiable reason to bench Lowry too, because like you said, he led the team in three-point attempts last night. Jetty led the team in terms of three-pointers made overall, but Lowry has three-point gravity. He provides spacing for Mobley to operate and Allen to operate. He provides spacing for Sexton to slash. He's a reliable pick-and-pop partner and even a pick-and-roll partner at times for Darius Garland. Like, in theory, Lowry Markkanen makes sense in this lineup. I wonder if they'll drag this out as long as possible, and maybe this is extra motivation for Isaac to refine things. So, I don't know, man. We'll see. I think him coming off the bench isn't a bad thing. I don't think it's an insult to him as a player because, again, it's not how if you start, it's how you finish. And Isaac has finished plenty of games for the Cavs when he has played so far. Yeah. So I just think JB's trying to do what's best for their crown jewel rookie, which is Evan Mobley, and also just kind of make life easier for Colin and Darius as well, because and Jarrett, like those four, like really your core future that you want to build around, and then you just build around those four.
I mean, that's a good way to put it, to be honest with you. And I think, you know, when you're talking about in terms of Okoro, I'm very high on him as well. But until he is able to provide something that offsets what Markkanen provides from a spacing standpoint, it's kind of hard to justify putting him in that starting lineup, especially, you know, they're in this weird spot right now where Markkanen is oversized at the three and Okoro is undersized. At the three, they don't really, you know, outside of maybe Jetty. I don't know if you have a true small forward on the roster that you can roll out there and rely upon to make threes. You know, we saw Dean Wade line up there a few times last season, and it was good to see him get some run last night with Kevin missing some time. But I just don't know, man. It's time will tell whether or not this is good for his development moving forward. I think when you heavily feature, you know, the likes of Ricky Rubio, you're taking the ball out of Okoro's hands in regards to him developing as a facilitator. And I thought that was one of the key points, you know, heading into the season. You wanted to see, you know, how much he had progressed as a primary ball handler. But I just don't know if it's going to be there. But the crazy thing about it is it's not really affecting the team just yet, all but in a small sample size. But just like you, man, I'm looking at this and I'm like, this does not just not feel right. But it's winning games. It's one of those things until it stops working. I guess you got to keep throwing them out there. Yeah. It's been a very interesting start, though.
No, it definitely has been. And I don't know. Like you said, until it stops working, I'm not going to question it much because JB seems hell-bent and determined to make this work too. He says some of the right things sometimes where he's like, yeah, we need to shoot more three-pointers and play at a faster pace. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's the right thing. And then he follows that up with saying like, well, I think we make our presence felt within on the interior. So I guess we're seeing a little bit of both where the Cavs are playing three bigs and making the presence felt in the interior in terms of Mobley and Allen, and then maybe Markkanen as well if he feels like playing to his size. But yeah, until it stops working, until the bottom kind of gives out, which I don't know if it will, because I think JB has a good feel for the pulse of this team too. I think he's comfortable pulling the hook on a player who's not performing well. So
we just saw that.
If Jetty Osmond is hot, you keep him in, but if not, you just say, all right, that's enough. Let's see what Dean Wade's got for us. And if not, we'll go shorter and tighter on our rotation, because it is wild to think that Dylan Windler still hasn't cracked the rotation. I think maybe it's because conditioning wise, he's still a little bit far behind. I still wonder if they're going to send him down to the charge now that
was going to be my next question. Yeah.
Yeah. We go ahead and ask him, man. I love to talk some Dylan Windler because I've moved on, but I still hope that he can provide meaningful basketball.
It's kind of gives you the same feeling that Kevin Love does at points. Yeah. You know, you're like, he's never going to live up to the contract, but he can still provide some very good basketball and stretches, which he has to begin the season. In regards to Windler, man, the opinion on him is still the jury on him is really still out. You know, he had some nice stretches last season. I think he hit it was one stretch in which he hit 9 straight triples. I think breaking or tying Kyrie's record, but he just cannot remain on the court. It appears that he's, you know, made of glass, but I'm still pulling for him. And I think that if he is able to somehow crack the rotation, get on the court, he could develop into that guy that the Cavs so sorely need, you know, on the wing. He would really just completely take away the Cavs' inability to draft or trade for or sign a scoring, you know, slashing wing that they've just been missing since LeBron. You know, and I'm not comparing. Obviously, I'm not comparing Wendler to LeBron, but that wing has just been missed ever since. If Wendler could crack the rotation, it would be great to see that. What are your thoughts on him?
So in theory, Dylan Wendler is really what the Cavs need in terms of just wing depth. He can. I say this because there are folks who cover the draft that are a lot smarter at this than I am, but like rebounding, like absurd rebounding numbers is something you really should pay attention to in college. And Dylan Wendler's senior season, he averaged double-digit rebounds. And he's great at rebounding at the next level too. So like he provides that. He has size. And when I talked to – I did a feature on him when I was with Forbes when he was a rookie and he was just settling down to Cleveland. And I asked him like, well – what player LeBron James is his favorite player growing up. So he's like, it's really cool to play for the Cavs. He's like, this is honestly like one of the coolest things in my life. I'm like, that's awesome. Like, so what player do you compare yourself to? He's like, well, I don't compare myself to LeBron. I'm like, okay, at least we're keeping it honest. He's like, I kind of see myself in a Joe Ingles role where I can provide some defense, some rebounding. I'm a bigger wing that can shoot and slash and even provide some tertiary playmaking as well. He's like, I think playmaking is an underrated ability and asset in my game. My biggest complaint last year when he was healthy was I don't think he was properly utilized by the Cavs. JB used him as a slasher and a rebounder. And I'm like, run some double drag plays, run an elevator doors play for Dylan where you can just give him some easy looks from three because he has a pure shot. He has pure mechanics. He can stroke it. And I think if he can showcase that, teams will have to respect his shot. And I think it'll make spacing a lot easier for the Cavs too. But like you said, he's kind of made of glass. It's unfortunate. It's frustrating. Like
he's a player.
He's a player I root for a lot. Right, I just want him to be healthy because I can't imagine the mental, not just the physical toll rehab does, but I think of Andrew Luck a lot. Where Andrew Luck kept dealing with injury after injury. Where he said, "You know what? I'm done mentally. I just can't do this recovery process again." Where like I think I'm ready, and then I have another setback, so I'm retiring from professional sports. And I think of Dylan in that scenario, where you're like, I keep fighting back to rehab from these freak injuries that just keep happening. Like, when is enough enough? Like, I worry about the mental toll it's taking on him. And he, by all accounts, he's doing okay, but just I think maybe he hasn't cracked the rotation because he isn't in shape. And JB does lean on guys he trusts a lot too. And I think you're seeing a lot of that with the shortened rotation against Charlotte. Yeah. Like Lamar Stevens did not touch the floor after kind of two bad games against the Lakers and the Suns. And Dean Wade played, but he played like think about 11 minutes, sparingly. 13 minutes against the Hornets, but he didn't have much of an impact other than one good cut and four boards. But like D or JB's, one of his biggest downfalls, I guess you want to say, is he does lean on guys he trusts the most. In Memphis, the complaint was that he didn't lean on the younger guys. So Jaren Jackson Jr. hardly played under JB Bickerstaff, but kind of has no choice here. He has a ton of young players, so he's forced to play them. So I think if Dylan can go down and rehab with the Charge a little bit, maybe 5 games with them. I don't think there's any shame in that. He's done it in the past. He can show that he's in in-game shape because I talked with Dan Giroux, the new head coach, about this. It's a coach Dylan's familiar with too because Dan's been with Cleveland since, I want to say, the 2015-16 season when they won the championship. So like Dylan has familiarity there. Like, get him comfortable. They're running the same system as Cleveland is. They're trying to do the same things the Cavs are, playing with a lot of bigs. I think get him comfortable, get him feeling good in his body again. And then maybe if JB sees he's in shape, can bring him along slowly and let him play. Like, I don't think the Cavs have anything to lose. Let's say you maybe take away some of Dean, or you just like sub Dean Wade out for Dylan Wendler in this scenario and you play Wendler instead. Like, I don't think you have anything to lose there. And like, again, like if he's not working, you pull the hook and you put Dean Wade in, or you give more minutes to Jetty Osmond. So, because like in theory, Dylan Wendler answers a lot of the questions and the problems the Cavs have. It's just he can't stay healthy. And it's unfortunate because the biggest what if is I still think about how Shams Charania, this is a rumored story, but Shams Charania has tweeted originally that the Cavs drafted Keldon Johnson, the 26th pick. Mm-hmm. And then they said, oh no, Cleveland's actually taking Belmont's Dylan Windler instead. Apparently, and this is the rumor, Golden State really wanted Dylan, and the Cavs, to stick it to the Warriors one last time,
took
Dylan instead. And now you look, Keldon Johnson's playing pretty dang well for the Spurs, then Dylan Windler can't even get on the floor. Yep. Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. That sums it up right there. That sigh. It's just, you know, you wish the best for him. And he looked very good his senior season at Belmont, as you alluded to. And he had some stretches last year where he played very well. They didn't utilize him correctly, and they probably could have got a little bit more production out of him. But the only way for him to be able to fix some of these issues is to be on the court. And if you're not available, you know, what is the organization going to do? They're eventually going to have to move on if the guy is not able to remain on the court. I am pulling for him, though, because theoretically he does solve so many issues for the team. And, you know, that's always the biggest factor with this guy. There's a number of these guys on the Cavs roster, but, you're pulling for him. Speaking of Kevin Love, you know, referred to him before this. What are your thoughts on his start to the season, man? Because he's really impressed me with his just – it looks like he's completely bought in to his new role. And I think this is – prior to, you know, the news yesterday, I felt really good about his start to the season. And hopefully, you know, he's able to not miss too much time, because I think his impact on the court, although, you know, statistically hasn't been – especially shooting – hasn't been great. The impact that he's provided, you know, as a leader and rebounding still, and he's a very good passer. I just think that the Cavs can still utilize that. I don't know how long. I don't know if they're going to be able to, you know, kind of revitalize his trade value, or if that's even possible at this time. But give me your thoughts on Love's beginning to the season.
I'm encouraged by it, honestly. Like you said, I'm surprised he adjusted so well to this bench role so quickly. But it's been good so far. Like you said, his shooting impacts haven't been great, but I think when Kevin Love is on the floor on a night-to-night basis, I think he possesses true three-point gravity. I know
same thing as Markkanen.
Yeah, same thing as Markkanen. But if you put Love on the floor, like, teams have to respect the fact that he can hit a three-pointer, and like, he will drag defenders out onto the perimeter. And because of that, I think he makes the young players, whether it's Mobley, whether it's Sexton, whether it's Allen, like, players who thrive in the paint at times, that makes their life easier. And I like you said, I think he's adjusted really well to it. I think maybe him, more than anything, the most encouraging thing is, like, one, he's excited to play with Ricky Rubio again. I think that bromance in Minnesota was a little underrated, and I bully on the Cavs, at least, for not marketing it more on social media, because, like, when Ricky first spoke to the media for the first time, he said it was a good flex. He's like, well, I was on a yacht in the south of France or something like that, and Kevin called me, but I said, hey, I'm on a boat right now, can I call you later? He's like, I never called him back, though. I feel really bad. And I'm like, oh. But, like, that's fun. But I think more than anything, you're getting good vibes from Kevin Love, like you alluded to. Like, he's bought into this role, and I think it's weird to think, because they clearly brought in Ed Davis to act as one of the veteran presences in the locker room. He really talked about how he worked Jared Allen a lot in Brooklyn, and his goal is, he's like, oh, I didn't, when Jared Allen, when they played together in Brooklyn, and Ed Davis said, Jared Allen was a $100 million player, but I knew he had the potential to be, so I pushed him. And he said, Evan Mobley's a $500 million player, which, if a player makes that much money, goodness gracious. But Ed Davis was brought in to be a locker room guy. Ricky Rubio was brought in to be a mentor for Darius Garland, and to an extent, Colin Sexton to be a locker room guy. The Cavs, for the longest time, hoped Kevin Love could have been that locker room guy, but he hasn't, for the most part. But so far, he has been. And it's weird to say, but he is another key veteran to kind of help steady and right the ship a little bit. And I think the reality of the situation is kicking in, where he's like, okay, I've been kind of a punk. I've been injury prone. I have a really heavy contract. No team really wants to trade for me.
It's my last chance.
Yeah, this is my last chance. If I it's crystal clear the Cavs have moved on from me, because not only did they draft a player third overall at my position, but they traded Larry Nance Jr. for another player at my position. They don't really need me at this point. If I'm saying this from Kevin Love's perspective. So why not be positive about it? Try and be impactful. Like Evan Mobley said that Kevin's worked with him a lot in terms of shooting. So is Lowry. You can see him coaching up him as in Kevin Love coaching up Evan or Jared or Lowry Markkanen or even Colin Sexton. Like he grabs them when they're in timeouts or when they're in huddles and like just tells them like, hey, you did this wrong, or hey, like let's work on this, or like, hey, try and find me on the floor here, or like I'm gonna work with you here. Like he's trying to be a high positive impact guy, but he's still dry and witty and fun. Like I remember, well, when Ricky Rubio had that almost had a dust up with Campazzo last week, like Kevin Love was real funny. He's just like yeah, I saw Jeff Green about the check-in and I was with the slamming through the table and it was gonna be a royal rumble on the court, and I'm like, yeah, this is fun. I think like Kevin knows his time in Cleveland's coming to an end. It became crystal clear when they made the moves to move on from him. And according to J.B. Bickerstaff, at least Kevin approached him and said like, hey, I think it's best for the team if I come off the bench. I think it's best for the team if we kind of focus on these younger guys. Like Kevin is really embracing the situation, which is surprising. Because when this all started, he signed that extension and he broke his foot. Mm-hmm. And Colin Sexton was a rookie and they still had fragments of that 2018 finals team on the roster. And then by the time he came back, George Hill and Kyle Korver are gone. J.R. Smith is exiled. All that's left is Larry, Tristan, Deli was back, I think, at that. But no, Deli came back the following season. Gosh, but either
there were so many moves that year. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was the great Kobe Altman teardown, so a lot of moves had to happen. And, I mean, that's the reality of the situation of the LeBron James team, is, like, there's a lot of pieces that are left, and you slowly tear it down. And
yeah.
Like, I understand maybe being frustrated with the situation. You're going through growing pains. You lose Ty Lue. You lose Larry Drew's asleep at the wheel. John Boeheim isn't the answer. I think J.B. Bickerstaff's the right coach for this team now. The Cavs had a lot of missteps. I think if you put Truth Serum in Kevin Love and in the organization, they both say they regret signing the extension. I mean, money's money, though. So I don't know what's going to happen. I still don't think a team would trade for him. But I do think maybe if this keeps up, maybe the Cavs could find a team next offseason to do it. It's just that $60 million price tag is a really tough pill to swallow over the next 2 years, especially when you approach an owner and say, hey, we traded for a guy who is the most expensive bench player in the league. Can you go ahead and cut him a check real quick? And we had to give up quite a few. Because the other problem is you have to lump together a lot of contracts to trade for Kevin Love, too. Unless you're trading another negative asset for him. And I don't know what's going to happen there. You're not many of those out there. So I think Kevin Love will be here through this season. And then once he's on that last year of his deal starting with like next summer, I think the Cavs then could approach trades, or they could just do a buyout with him at that point. And I still think a buyout's eventually inevitable, because I just don't think a team justifiably trade for him. But I think if he leaves on good terms, especially with the fans, because I wonder, like when Blake Griffin unloaded the clip on that podcast and he said, oh, I read everything Detroit fans said about me. I'm just like, I wonder if Kevin Love reads everything Cleveland fans say about him. But I think right now in this moment, we have good vibes, Kevin Love, and I hope it stays. And I hope, like I said, it's hard for me to believe I'm actually saying this, but he is now a key veteran for this young team. And I hope that maintains.
Oh man, I couldn't agree with you more in pretty much everything you said. The tale of Kevin Love is kind of a sad one in Cleveland.
It is.
You know, he's so much potential coming over, and we knew that he was going to eventually be the third fiddle, you know, in the big three with Kyrie and LeBron. And when time came for both of those two to move on, and Love was the last really big piece of that championship team, you kind of knew the writing was on the wall. But the contract money.
Isn't that weird, though, to think that he was the guy who was always floated in trade rumors, and he's quite literally the last member of the championship team standing.
Weird, man. Like, I thought, you know, honestly, I thought Tristan Thompson would have outlived Kevin Love.
So did I.
In Cleveland, just because, you know, he was really beloved in the Cleveland area. And obviously they moved on from him for the right reasons. But in the case of Love, that is very strange. He went through all of these trade rumors only to still remain the last piece. And, you know, I will forever be grateful for his contributions to that title team. You know, he didn't statistically, Love did not contribute a lot during that finals run, but he was a key piece in game seven, especially defensively, during the actual championship season. But absolutely. I'm liking what I'm seeing out of him. I'm wondering how much of that actually has to do with the Cavs winning and how long that will carry on. But, you know, for now, it's working.
You sound like me. You're like the voice in the back of your head's like, yeah, he's positive right now, but when they're losing, is he going to have another meltdown?
Like, seriously, hope
I hope not.
Yeah, it's just as possible that the blow-ups, you know, resurface if the Cavs begin to lose games through stretches. But for now, it's encouraging. He looks bought in, and going into the season, I kind of thought to myself, this is the perfect role for him to at least, you know, keep him healthy. And by all accounts right now, he seems to be contributing and heading in the right direction in that regard. And I too wonder, you know, what his perception of Cleveland is going to be when his time is over. I hope it's not the Blake Griffin yeah. route, but you never truly know. He's just so witty.
Yeah. Kevin Love press conferences are fun. Like, I don't know, man, like he's so dry and honest, and you can tell when he's lying sometimes, and you're like, oh man, what's going on? But like, they're like, what was, like, let's say the Cavs had a bad loss 2 years ago. They're like, well, Kevin, what happened? And he's like, well, we played like shit. What do you expect me to say? And I'm like, you know, I appreciate the blunt honesty.
Yeah. Sometimes. I mean, cause you don't get that out of so many players, especially young guys out there. Yeah,
young guys are like, oh man, we tried our best, but look, we'll get him next time. Kevin Love's like, no, dude, we played like shit. Like, what do you expect me to say?
Kevin Love just doesn't give a fuck sometimes. Exactly. I mean, that's exactly how it is. And you do have to appreciate his candor, you know, from time to time when it's not over the top. But, I mean, you were at Cavs Media Day. You saw, you know, him give that his time at the podium. You know, you never really know what's true and what's not true in regards to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate him being honest about the Jerry Colangelo situation during Media Day, where he's just said, listen, I want to move on from it. Like, I've made my peace. I've said what I wanted to say. Like, let's move past it. Like, he'll just tell you how it is sometimes. And then I still worry about the calf. He says it's healthy. The calves say it's healthy. But it was originally an Achilles injury, and those two go hand in hand with one another. It clearly impacted his time with Team USA. So maybe this limited role, like you said, is really good for his health too, because calf injuries can be kind of a ticking time bomb for players. And if you're a player like Kevin Love, who has next to no athleticism to begin with at this point, an Achilles injury would be pretty much career ending for him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think it would be close to calling it the end at that point. Let's shift gears here for a moment. I just want to get your honest opinion on something. If you don't feel inclined to answer this question, I'm not going to force you into it. Based upon the start to the season that Colin Sexton has had, I mean, from a statistical standpoint, pretty much all it's down across the board. And I think this was to be expected, especially when you're not expecting him to have to do as much as a primary ball handler and as a scorer. But I guess my question for you, my friend, would be, do you think the Cavs have been vindicated and kind of waiting this whole contract process out just purely based upon the play on the court through 8 games?
It's tough, man, because I'm comfortable talking about this. Like, yeah, if you look at his numbers, his touches are down. His overall looks are down, but my buddy Chris Manning makes a good point of pointing this out too, where if you look at the game against the Clippers, there are times where the Cavs are like, okay, Colin, call your number on an isolation play, where Colin just dribble the air out of the ball, and then he becomes the primary focus of an opposing defense, and then it opens other guys up, but at the same time, like, sometimes Colin does get a little bit of tunnel vision. Oh, yeah. Still. Yeah. where he doesn't really see the defense breaking down around him. But there's times he does too, like where it's really encouraging, where I say one of my favorite plays the Cavs run is they have a cutter, whether it's Mobley, sometimes it's Sexton even cutting as well, but like the Cavs will break down a defense, or sorry, not Mobley, Allen, but and Mobley's at the elbow, where like it's either Garland or Sexton initiating to Mobley, and then they throw it to a cutter along the baseline. Like, it's such a simple play, but I'm like, you know, this is simple and it works because the Cavs don't run simple plays sometimes. Sometimes they just run one read and then the offense breaks down. But
yeah,
my counterpoint to everyone kind of wringing their hands about Colin Sexton is this is probably his most productive season so far.
I agree.
I don't necessarily disagree maybe with Jason Lloyd's take long term, but I don't want to put a firm cap on any of these players because nothing is for sure set in stone yet.
Right.
Like, in terms of these young core pieces, the only one who is guaranteed to be here long term, at least unless he's traded, is Jared Allen, because he just signed a contract extension. I'd say Evan Mobley is a pretty safe candidate too, because they just drafted him, but Sexton could be traded. Okoro could be traded. Garland could be traded. Markkanen age-wise fits in. He could be traded as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a superstar tomorrow says, I want to go team up with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You could bundle any of these guys together. So I'm not necessarily going to put a cap on any of these guys yet until I know, like, okay, they're going to be here long-term.
Mm-hmm.
Let's figure out their overall fit. And like I talked about before, JB is a firm believer that he wants to put the five best players on the floor at any given moment. And yeah, there's times Sexton isn't closing games and things like that. And it's really, really tough about what is and isn't going to happen. But I think JB just also plays with the pulse of the team too. Like, there's a lot of lineup and roster versatility too. Like, the people mm-hmm. complain about them running two point guard sets with Garland and Rubio at times. And I say at the same time, they're playing three bigs who probably can't initiate an offense on their own. It makes more sense to put two point guards on the floor with them, because then you have two initiators who can run an offense while the other one plays off ball, who also mm-hmm. provides a tertiary playmaking threat.
Yep.
And if it's Garland, a spacing threat. I think JB is still kind of figuring things out. I still think it's too small of a sample size to really say. I know like 8 to 10 games is kind of that sweet spot to say, like, okay, this is working, this isn't working. We need to make mm-hmm. some changes and evaluations. But I think Sexton's playing well. I think if he plays within the offense, he's playing fast. Like, Sexton in the open floor on the fast break is damn near unguardable.
You don't want to
like
see that guy. That. Yeah.
You don't. And like, you saw it against the Clippers where he was just busting out past LA every single time on the fast break, because LA is one of the worst defensive teams on the fast break, and Colin mm-hmm. exploited that mismatch for sure. And there's a lot of fun stuff there. He's the most entertaining player on a night-to-night basis for the Cavs, because you just don't know what you're going to get with Colin Sexton. But he shattered every preconceived notion about him, because I like to jokingly remind people that when he was coming out of Alabama, the player he was compared to most was Eric Bledsoe, because mm-hmm. of his defensive potential and his lack of shooting. And I said, now that we're year four of the Colin Sexton experience, he has completely flipped that bolt on its back and shattered it, because Sexton has the God-given ability to play defense. He plays with hustle and tenacity for sure, but he can shoot. He can shoot really well. He's an elite three-level scorer. His offensive game keeps getting better and better. I think the biggest development for him recently is he's using that physicality and speed to draw fouls and draw contact and get to the free throw line, which is even more fun. But it's tough, man, because people think I'm a Colin Sexton hater. I'm not. He's one of my favorite players to watch on a night-to-night basis. He's a player I root for. People mm-hmm. think that I said 2 years ago maybe he's a sixth man, and then I kind of mm-hmm. walked that stance back, thinking, like, you know, I'm not going to put a cap on this team, because, like I said, no one's guaranteed to be here long-term. Like, I don't think anyone's really set in stone other than Jared Allen. I mean, and Jared Allen could still very realistically be traded if the Cavs think, hey, Evan Mobley's our five of the future, and we don't think he works at Jared Allen. But thankfully, that tandem works. So I think this year is an evaluation period. It's tough mm-hmm. last year because the team is playing in empty arenas. COVID was impacting everything. It was a compressed schedule. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. I think the Cavs will firmly evaluate everything,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll say, okay, let's sign Colin Sexton X amount of dollars. Darius Garland's extension eligible. Hopefully they lock him up sooner instead of later, because I don't think you want to have to deal with this situation 2 years in a row. Ooh. Just kind of get this all locked up and figured out. Do I think Colin's a max player? No. But do I think he could be betting on himself this year. Yeah, because I, from what I heard, it was he was offered a contract worth about 18 to 20 million annually as the base. Mm-hmm. And then with incentives, it could get up to about 25 million annually, which isn't a bad offer. But if you want to bet on yourself and try and make for more, go for it. But I've read the conspiracies that like JB is intentionally
sabotaging.
Yeah, sabotaging and minimizing Collins' touches in order to have the Cavs get him on a cheaper contract or like affect his financial future, and like the media is playing a part in it.
Yeah.
I'll just say this, like full stop, the media has no impact on any of these decisions teams make. Like they read this stuff and like they'll read what the outside noise is.
I'm sure
the
only time you have,
I know, but like they laugh at it. And the only impact I think if I was a voting member I would have for Colin Sexton is if he had incentives in his contract to make like all NBA or like all-star stuff or MVP voting or things like that. That's the only time like the media comes in play, and that's very seldom happens because a lot of players don't like those incentives because they can be pretty unfair. Like there can be some pretty freaky ones, but I'm not too worried about Colin. I think the offense is still figuring itself out. Jared Allen said it the other day when they were playing Atlanta, and he's like, we're still playing one or two steps faster than we need to, and we're still settling in and figuring things out. And I think the same goes for Colin. Like, Darius missed two games. He looked a step behind for a little bit running the offense. I still think he's trying to find his comfort level of getting everyone involved while also being a shooter and a threat from the perimeter in terms of scoring as well too. And I think the same goes for Colin. Like, he's just trying to do the best by his teammates and not frustrate everybody.
Yeah.
But at the same time, still produce. And again, like, yeah, he's touching it less, but he's producing way better if you look at it. Like, oh, that's counter argument is everyone's like, oh, he's hardly touching the ball. I'm like, yeah, but he's still scoring at the same rate like he usually is.
Indeed. Yeah. I think with him, you know, and you hit on it a few times in what you just said, I think that in regards to evaluating him, it's going to be a fluid process this year. You know, it's very difficult to slap a label on the guy this early based upon what we've seen. And so that's completely understandable. When he does touch the ball, he's trying to make the most out of it. And he legitimately looks like he's trying to get his teammates involved. The assist numbers are kind of, they're not as telling as they would indicate. You know, he's had a lot of potential assists out there, a couple of beautiful passes. But I think he is being fairly productive with what's going on. If you're all over Cavs Twitter like I am, I try not to let a lot of that
to keep it cool.
I mean, yeah, I everything that I've seen from you appears that way. And I don't know why people like to point the finger at you in that regard in regards to Colin, because
I leaned into a villain bit for like a solid month where I just like would like joke about it, and everyone's like, dude, you gotta stop. And then I took like a little mental health break from Twitter, and then I came back reporting like teams that were interested in trading for him. Mm-hmm. And it was the Knicks, it was the Heat, the Thunder, Oklahoma City still pretty interested in trading for him because they like his pairing with Shea overall. But yeah, people are like, dude, you need to stop, you're just trolling. I'm like, no, I'm actually not, I'm just working. And then I learned this nifty feature where you can just shut off any and all notifications from people who you don't follow. Mm-hmm. So like, that's how I feel about it. Cause like, I didn't follow you back for a while. And then like you DM me asking me to come on the show. And like, I wish I came on sooner cause this has been great, but it's mostly based off a take I made 2 years ago. And just the hardcore Sexton fans who will not let it go. And it is what it is, man. Like, whatever, you guys are free to think what you want, but I can use my energy in so much more productive ways than fighting everybody online.
Indeed, man. And I've gotten into a couple of them myself, and I've tried not to. It really is very hard not to, and I might have to do some of the same things that you just alluded to. But man, yeah, I think you have to judge Colin Sexton fluidly. And me, I am, you know, I would like to consider myself, you know, a pro Sexton, kind of a pro Sexton guy, but I have to look at things logically. And I think what the Cavs have been able to do thus far and the way that they've been able to utilize him, probably it's better off for him in the long run. If you ask me, I mean, that's just my opinion on it, and I get it. And there are going to continue to be conspiracy theorists out there in regards to his play and his time.
It's wild, man. It's wild. Like, That's such a new one. I'm like, yeah, let's hamstring a 20-something year old financially by not letting him get touches. Like, no, yeah. Dude, that's such a disservice of the coach to not let his best player get the best looks. And I had to walk away from my phone for a little bit on that one. I'm just like, I'm just gonna put my phone down real quick.
Yeah,
just,
I mean,
just walk away.
They're winning. You know, they're winning games. And I think that is what takes precedence at this point in time. Oh, man, you got an Alani. I love those things.
I love them, too. They're good for you. They're not like...
Definitely.
Yeah, sorry.
No, you're good. I had to cut away there for a moment from the Colin Sexton stuff. But
it's always heavy. So I get it.
Yeah, indeed. For him, who knows what's going to happen. You know, time will tell how this kind of plays out. I'm really hoping the best for him, but at the same time, above all, I'm hoping the best for the Cavs. And so whatever is best for them in that regard, I hope to kind of interest the line and they're able to kind of work something out that benefits both sides. But, you know, I can't complain right now. The team's winning. They're utilizing him, I think, the best way that they can. I think the biggest complaint in regards to that is what seems to be JB's reluctance to roll Sexton out there in the closing units. I think that's what's getting a lot of these conspiracy theorists, but it's working.
It's working, but it does make you wonder sometimes too.
It does.
Cause you're like, Sexton is one of their more gifted offensive players. We had a listener point out last night, cause he plays hard on defense.
He does. Like,
especially this season, like, credit where credit's due. Colin's playing really well on defense this year at times. Like, there's times where he gets blown past, or there's times, you know, that's just the problem of being a smaller guard. You're just lighter, and if you get crushed on a screen, it is what it is. But it was interesting last night. It made me raise an eyebrow because we had a listener point it out, and I thought about it for a brief second. But in the closing moments against Charlotte, JB subbed Colin out for Jetty Osmond on a defensive possession.
That's indefensible. I got to say
That's weird. It was weird because Jetty Osmond is not a good defender. Like, if you watch his feet on a night-to-night basis, you'll see quickly he's not a good defender. But I don't know, man. Maybe he's trying to keep Colin a little fresh, let him get a couple gulps of air if they need him for a quick bucket. But, like, it is interesting. I think it's just a lot of tinkering right now. JB is a coach who likes to tinker with things and try things, different things out. I think the three big lineup being his biggest, like, brainchild to come from this production. But there's times I'm encouraged too, because I think if you pair Sexton and Rubio together, it's a pretty good unit, right? Like, it's a good tandem right there. And I understand the approach of subbing Colin out early so you can kind of have him come back into the bench unit towards the end of the first quarter and the early second quarter. Like, people get paranoid about that too. But not having him close, it is interesting. And I need to see more of what the Cavs are closing with before I really ask JD what's going on in those scenarios. But it is definitely something I've taken notice of as well, where I'm like, huh, Colin isn't closing a lot of these games. That's interesting, because he's their best free throw shooter. He's really handy in closing moments, especially in tight games. I'm curious why he's not on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes you raise your eyebrow. I've spoken about this on a number of episodes to begin the season, but I'm just not, like you said, we have to see more of it. We have to see them, you know, kind of figure things out. And some of this is on, you know, the fact that the game flow, whatever, you know, however the game is being dictated. Sometimes if you're seeing a game out of hand, as often the case, you know, on this West Coast trip, you saw that against Phoenix. The game got out of hand early. They figured they'd probably get some guys some rest. Garland had high minutes, but Mobley, Allen, and Sexton, you know, their minute totals were fairly low in that regard. And so that's when the Turpin seemed to get it at all time high in that regard, in regards to the Sexton conspiracy theories. But
this is against Phoenix, he said?
Yes, against
Phoenix. That's when it I took the night off to enjoy a quiet evening in with my significant other for our Halloween. So I'm glad I wasn't around for that.
Oh man. Yeah. You'd be glad you weren't, because that's when it really got to a fever pitch. And I'm just like, you have to take it with a grain of salt. It looked bad. It was a head scratcher. People are saying Sexton kind of gave up. You know, he kind of quit on the team. And I'm like, no, I don't see it that way. They were on the second half of a back-to-back. The guys needed rest. The brutal West Coast trip. There's just so many different factors.
So,
oh, for sure. And Phoenix also just made the NBA Finals last
exactly.
year. We can't discredit them for that.
And that's a good segue into my last question of the day, Freeman. And is that that is based upon what you've seen from them thus far? Have you adjusted your expectations moving forward, or is this sample size too small for you? Like, do you think where did you have them finishing at to close this season?
Oh gosh, I'm trying to think off the top of my head what I had, and I'm actually going to look this up as we talk, because I shared. You can hear me typing in the background here.
It's all good.
I think I had Cleveland. Oh, I had them finishing 13th in the East, and my order was Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Miami, Boston, Chicago, Philadelphia, Indiana, New York, Charlotte, Washington, Toronto, Cleveland, and then after that, Detroit and Orlando. My view process of the Eastern Conference overall is still Orlando and Detroit aren't trying to win. I think Orlando is more interesting than Detroit because they have just a lot of good young guards on that team. But the other 13 teams are trying to win, Cleveland included. Like, the Cavs aren't trying to actively tank. Like, losing becomes a stench you cannot quite wash out unless you completely rip things down to the roots and rebuild. So you got to build a culture that is conducive to winning. You got to build a culture that is encouraging winning instead of saying, like, you know what, we're going to try our best, but in the closing moments, roll out a lineup that makes no sense. Like, JB rolls out Taco Fall, bring up the ball. He did that the preseason. He's not going to really do it unless it's an absolute blowout. So I think my viewpoint of the Cavs at the beginning of the season is they're a bad team that is going to try hard on a night-to-night basis, and they are going to win some games. I think their betting line was 26.5, and I said I'd smash the under on that one. I say about 25, 26 games for the year is their absolute cap. Mm-hmm. I still feel comfortable in thinking that that could be the case because it's still too small of a sample size, and there's probably some teams still playing into shape. But with how well they played on the West Coast road trip, they went 3-2 on that West Coast road, mostly West Coast road trip. They finished it in Charlotte. Like, that's pretty impressive. Like, they responded to their first test of adversity well. I think they're going to be in the mix for the play-in tournament. I think it's going to be between them. It's going to be between them, Toronto, New York. Indiana, I think, is going to figure it out eventually, though, so we'll see what happens there. Philadelphia is a bit of a wild card as well with what they do with Ben Simmons, too, because that situation could get uglier again fast. But
yeah.
I think they'll be in the hunt for the play-in. I don't think they'll be a playoff team necessarily, just because the rest of the conference got better. And, like, naturally, Brooklyn's going to get better once Kyrie gets vaccinated. And I think KD and Harden get more and more comfortable with one another. And, like, Milwaukee knows how to win. Atlanta, I think they're a move away as well. I think if they figure out what's going on with Cam Reddish, maybe if they flip him for more positive assets as well, like, they could be really scary. Like, Miami is odd, but they're going to grind people into dust. Boston's interesting. Chicago's so good, and I'm feeling good about being bullish on the Bulls finally. And I think the Cavs will be in the thick of the play-in. I think their biggest test will be in January when they are back on the West Coast and they play five teams in 7 nights, including like Golden State, Sacramento, San Antonio. Like, some of those teams aren't great, but they're on the same page as Cleveland, where
they play hard.
They play hard. That's all it is. Like, Oklahoma City is probably the easiest team in that lineup or in that grouping right there. And they play Utah as well, which, like, historically Cleveland has not played well in. No. So I think they're going to be in the hunt for the play-in tournament this year. We'll see what happens. I think I need a larger sample size, and maybe like mid-December, late December, early January. Like, I'll firmly say, like, okay, this Cavs team's either with it or they're not, because the Cavs could also make some moves too. They could move Rubio. They could say, like, Kevin Love could be done for the year. They could trade him or something like that, or let him go. Like, there's a lot of stuff that could still happen between now and when maybe I make my firm evaluation. But, like, right now, I've been pleasantly surprised with the results. I think Evan Mobley's a lot further along than I thought he would be. The playmaking just really juices me on his potential. I think Garland is looking pretty good. I think the Rubio addition's been seamless. I think Kevin Love has looked really great off the bench for them. Jared Allen has lived up to every penny of that $100 million he earned. So I'm intrigued to see where they're headed next. I think they're a fun team. I think offensively they're a lot more aesthetically pleasing to watch some nights. Some nights it's still pretty sloggy, but most nights it's better. So I'm enjoying the experience so far. And I'm just like, we talked about this before we started recording. Like, I just want competency and stability for this Cavs team. We're only 5 years removed from the championship at this point, and that's one of the best moments of my life. I'll still say that. So
yeah,
I'm okay if the Cavs aren't like an immediate title threat, but if they're working the way back up, and like we talked about with like the Kevin Love contract situation, it's an untenable position to build out of the shadow of LeBron James, especially after he leaves your franchise in ruins for the second time. And I think the Cavs are on the right path. I just think they need to remain patient and stay the course.
That is an excellent way to put it. Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better myself. I think that, you know, as I said before, the expectations for this team have to be judged fluidly, you know, moving forward. They appear to be a little bit ahead of schedule in regards to what a lot of people had them pegged as to begin season, specifically, you know, the development of guys like Mobley. You know, you just didn't quite know what to expect with him against NBA caliber competition once the season started. There was a lot of caveats in regards to that. You know, people were really feeling like, hey, what's this guy's best fit? You know, is the weight going to be able to translate over well? Is he going to be able to play as impactful as he did, you know, within the preseason and summer league early on? So I don't know. For me, you know, I've been very high on this team. I do have them finishing as a play-in, playoff, you know, contender. I think they are very far away from title contention. I'll say that.
Oh, for sure.
But we haven't seen, you know, the last of the roster moves. I think we will see a move or two. And as much as I hate to admit the fact that moving Rubio could probably would probably hurt me deep down, just mm-hmm. because going from Matthew Dellavedova, God bless, you know, I love Delly, and Damian Dotson minutes last season to Ricky Rubio has been like a complete 180. The look is just completely different. And so until the Cavs have a solid, you know, contributor that can be replaced, that can replace Rubio, I don't know. I hope they don't move on from him, but time will tell.
Well, dude, it's wild to think, man, that how desperately the Cavs need a stable, I should say, backup behind Darius Garland, because they tried Dellavedova and Dante Exum for about 2 years, and Rubio made so, like, yes, losing Torian Prince hurts, and he's playing some okay-ish minutes in Minnesota right now, but I think the Rubio addition is going to do a lot more good than harm when at the end of the day. So yeah, I think it'd be tough too. And like, I joke with my co-host Chris Manny about this, but I don't buy jerseys often, but if I ever end up at Coachella, I think a sneaky option would be the Cavs City Edition Ricky Rubio jersey, just like a novelty item, and say like, yeah, I'm a real fan. I watch Ricky Rubio and appreciated what he brought to this team.
I mean, it's the impact is so evident already 8 games in. It's astounding. Just can you imagine how many games the Cavs might have been able to squeak out last season with Rubio in town? I don't know. It might have bumped them up a few games.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he just gives he's saying all the right things. It's really encouraging. Like Brian Windhorst said, he didn't expect to be traded to Cleveland. He expected to be traded to a contender. I can vouch for that. He did expect to end up with like one of the LA teams at the end of the day. I think the Clippers were where he really ultimately wanted to end up. But instead of just kind of being down about the situation, he's making the most of it. He is a bit of a guard whisperer in a sense, where he's like, listen, I played with Devin Booker. I played with Donovan Mitchell. I played with Anthony Edwards, and Anthony Edwards has said like Ricky Rubio is the best veteran or like teammate I've ever had in terms of a leader. I think the most encouraging thing with Rubio is he knows Darius Garland had a very good season last year. And he said the hardest thing isn't repeating that or having another good season. It's having a better season than he did prior than that. And he's like, and my job is to make sure Darius does that. So like Ricky knows what his role is with this team. And he's not really going to step out of line and say like, hey, JB, I should be starting over Darius, or I should be starting over Colin. Like, he's never going to ruffle any feathers or disrupt the flow of the locker room.
Yeah.
He just wants to make a positive impact. And I think having adults in the room like that is so helpful for a young team like this.
Yeah, the Cavs really, really have been benefiting from that. And, you know, to a lesser extent, Love playing the same type of role as a mentor this season. So been very encouraging. I really hope that he isn't moved, but the possibility, you know, remains. I'm glad that he's, you know, played the role of mentor so well thus far, but we'll have to see. With that being said, I'm going to go ahead and close out today's episode. As I said to begin, if you are not a subscriber of Write Down Euclid, make sure that you smash that subscribe button right away, because you're missing some very, very good content. Have a good day.